Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
So it may seem counterintuitive, but as we continue to warm up the planet with carbon pollution from fossil fuel burning, we are fueling stronger, more powerful, and more dangerous winter storms.
After this week's historic bomb cyclone blizzard, we look at the link between climate change, warming oceans, and stronger winter storms. We'll speak to climate scientist Michael Mann, then to Mexico, where dozens of people have died after Mexican security forces killed the nation's most powerful drug lord.
In this case, the U.S. government provided information and even issued an intelligence statement. But the entire operation, from planning onwards, is the responsibility of federal forces. In this case, the Ministry of National Defense.
We'll speak to Arizona State Professor Alexander Avina and the Pulitzer Prize-winning Reuters journalist Laura Gottesdiener, who's based in Mexico. Then to longtime war crimes prosecutor Reed Brody about law and accountability from the International Criminal Court's hearing on former Filipino President Rodrigo Duterte to the growing fallout from the Epstein files.
One reason we're seeing all these Epstein-related arrests across Europe is that prosecutors and police are essentially independent. In the United States, of course, federal prosecutors and the FBI are only going to investigate the people who Donald Trump wants to see investigated.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In the United Kingdom, authorities arrested, then released Peter Mandelson, the former British ambassador to the United States, over allegations he'd passed confidential government information to the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The London Metropolitan Police had started its investigation into Mandelson earlier this month and said it had arrested him, quote, on suspicion of misconduct in public office. Mandelson's arrest comes just days after former Prince Andrew was arrested for the same offense. Mandelson served as a government minister between 1997 and 2001, again from 2008 to 2010, fired from his diplomatic post in September last year as more information about his relationship with Epstein was released. There are now growing calls for British Prime Minister Keir Starmer to resign, since Starmer tapped Mandelson to be Britain's top U.S. envoy. This is Conservative Party leader Kemi Badenoch.
This is the defining moment of Keir Starmer's premiership, watching the man who he appointed to the highest position in our diplomatic service getting arrested by police. I think is an image that's going to stay with all of us for many, many years to come. And when people think about Keir Starmer and his premiership, they will see the arrest of Peter Mandelson as the defining moment.
Bard College has hired an outside law firm to conduct an independent investigation into communications between the college's longtime president, Leon Botstein, and the late convicted sex offender, Jeffrey Epstein. The release of the Epstein files reveals Botstein traveled to Epstein's Island in 2012. In 2013, the Bard president wrote to Epstein, quote, "I greatly cherish this new friendship. I have real admiration for how you go about doing things." Peter Attia, a CBS News contributor and longevity influencer, has resigned from his post as his emails with the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein were released to the public. Atiyah was recruited and hired by CBS's new editor-in-chief, Barry Weiss, in January, just days before the release of the Epstein files. In the emails, Atiyah provided medical advice and arranged testing for Epstein. In an email sent to Epstein in June 2015, Atiyah wrote, quote, "You know, the biggest problem with becoming friends with you, the life you lead is so outrageous, and yet I can't tell a soul," he said. Other emails were far more graphic. In 2008, Epstein was released from a Florida state jail after serving a 13-month term for his conviction of soliciting sex from a minor. An NPR investigation finds the Justice Department failed to release some of the Epstein files related to allegations that President Trump sexually abused a minor. According to NPR, the additional files include 50 pages of FBI interviews and notes from conversations with a woman who accused Trump of sexual abuse when she was a minor. This comes despite Attorney General Pam Bondi and Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, who was Trump's personal attorney, sending a letter to Congress earlier this month claiming no records were withheld or redacted, quote, on the basis of embarrassment, reputational harm, or political sensitivity, including to any government official, public figure, or foreign dignitary, unquote. The U.S. military has blown up another boat in the Caribbean, killing at least three people. The U.S. Southern Command published a 20-second video clip of the strike Monday, showing a small boat suddenly exploding. Trump officials again provided no evidence that the boat or the people on board were involved with drug trafficking. This is at least the third such attack over the course of a week, bringing the death toll from U.S. boat strikes in the Caribbean and Pacific to an estimated 150 people. Several legal and human rights experts have said the attacks amount to extrajudicial killings. In Mexico, schools in Jalisco and several other states remain closed as heavily armed Mexican security forces have flooded the streets following a series of reprisal attacks by cartel members in response to the killing of Mexico's most wanted drug lord, Nemesio Ruben Oseguera Cervantes, also known as El Mencho. More than 70 people have died since Sunday's operation. The country remains in high alert. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum spoke from Mexico City Monday, refuting news the United States had aided the attempted capture.
All operations are carried out by federal forces. There is no U.S. participation in the operation. What there is, as we have said here several times, is a great deal of information sharing. The understanding with the United States is based primarily on the exchange of intelligence information.
We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. A former ICE attorney and training instructor who quit his job last week in protest has accused the federal agency of lying to Congress about having drastically slashed its training standards for new officers. During a forum Monday held by congressional Democrats, Ryan Schwank called ICE's training program deficient, defective, and broken, as the agency has eliminated hundreds of hours of vital training courses, including on use of force, how to safely handle firearms, and protocols to detain immigrants. Ahead of the forum, Democrats unveiled internal documents provided to Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal by DHS whistleblowers detailing that new ICE recruits received nearly 250 fewer hours of training than before, with the agency also shortening training programs to just 42 days. The revelations come as the Department of Homeland Security is rapidly expanding its hiring of new agents, which has raised alarm on the agency's eroding screening and training standards. Ryan Schwank's testimony comes just weeks after ICE Director Todd Lyons testified in front of separate House and Senate committees, claiming the agency had not reduced the, quote, meat of the training, unquote. This week's findings contradict that. In related news, the only passenger in the car and a key witness in the fatal shooting of Ruben Ray Martinez, the 23-year-old U.S. citizen killed by an ICE agent in South Texas last year, reportedly died in a car crash this weekend. Joshua Orta had planned to speak up as the Trump administration lied about the circumstances of the fatal shooting. Palestinians in Gaza are observing the holy month of Ramadan amidst Israel's attacks and near total blockade on food and humanitarian aid. Families have gathered across Gaza for iftar, a meal at sunset to break the daily fast. This is Reda Abu Taima speaking from a camp in Khan Yunis for orphan children.
After the suffering that our children faced, this is the first Ramadan that we gather on one table after the ceasefire took place. The children are enjoying these atmospheres, especially at the orphanage camp. All of them gather and they have the same suffering. This is a joyful moment during Ramadan to celebrate with the children and give them support.
The cost of food has skyrocketed in Gaza due to Israel's restrictions and blockade. An analysis by Al Jazeera found food prices in Gaza at times have spiked by more than 700%. In more related news, Israeli soldiers fired nearly 1,000 bullets, at least 8 of them at point-blank range, killing 15 Palestinian aid workers last year in a massacre in South Gaza. That's according to a joint investigation by the independent research groups Earshot and Forensic Architecture, published Monday. Israel then tried to cover up the attack on the humanitarian aid convoy that included several workers with the Palestine Red Crescent Society and at least one member of UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees. President Trump blasted media reports about General Dan Kane, chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, warning him about the risks of attacking Iran. On Truth Social, President Trump wrote, quote, "General Kane, like all of us, would like not to see war. But if a decision is made on going against Iran at a military level, it's his opinion that it will be something easily won," unquote. It comes as the Washington Post reports General Kane warned the lack of critical munitions and support from regional allies would endanger U.S. troops, as the U.S. munitions stockpile has been significantly depleted by support for Israel and Ukraine. Axios is also reporting General Kane was, quote, all in on the Venezuela operation, but is now more cautious about Iran. Meanwhile, The Guardian's reporting President Trump is basing his decision to strike Iran on the advice provided by his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and his special envoy, Steve Witkoff, on whether Iran is serious about giving up its nuclear weapons program. The U.S. and Iran are scheduled to hold a third round of indirect talks in Geneva Thursday. Meanwhile, Iranian students are continuing their protests for a third consecutive day as anti-government demonstrations have spread to Tehran's Al-Zahra University. Students reportedly chanted, "Death to the dictator," referring to Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Comes over a month after Iranian authorities violently suppressed anti-government mass street demonstrations, reportedly killing thousands. 4 years ago today, Russia launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine. It's since become the biggest land war in Europe since World War II. Today, Russia controls just about a fifth of Ukraine's territory. The Center for Strategic and International Studies says Russia suffered 1.2 million casualties, including up to 325,000 troop deaths between February 2022 and last December, while Ukraine suffered between 500,000 to 600,000 military casualties, including up to 140,000 deaths. This is Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
And today, we must be just as determined and strong as we were when the invasion began. The threat hasn't become smaller. Yes, we are holding Russia back, but we have not yet guaranteed security. And only together can we do this together in Europe. Yes, together with America.
Federal Judge Aileen Cannon has permanently barred the Justice Department from releasing Special Counsel Jack Smith's report into the classified documents case against President Trump. Judge Cannon was appointed by President Trump. In 2023, Special Counsel Jack Smith charged Trump with 40 counts of illegally retaining classified information and obstructing government efforts to retrieve the materials. Cannon later dismissed those charges in 2024. Back in December, Smith testified before Congress in a closed-door deposition that his team has uncovered, quote, powerful evidence that showed Trump willfully retained highly classified documents after he left office in January 2021, storing them at a social club, including in a bathroom and a ballroom where events and gatherings took place, unquote. President Trump is set to deliver his 2026 State of the Union address to a joint session of Congress tonight. Some Democrats are planning to skip the address and hold a rally called the People's State of the Union on the National Mall instead. Senators Ed Markey, Jeff Merkley, Chris Murphy, Tina Smith, and Chris Van Hollen, and Congress members Yasemin Ansari, Becca Ballant, Greg Kassar, Veronica Escobar, Pramila Jayapal, and Delia Ramirez and Bonnie Watson Coleman are expected to join the rally. In a statement, Senator Murphy said, quote, "These aren't normal times, and showing up for the speech puts a veneer of legitimacy on the corruption and lawlessness that's defined President Trump's second term," unquote. It comes as the House Democratic leader, Hakeem Jeffries, announced he's inviting the family of the Reverend Jesse Jackson to the State of the Union address tonight. House Speaker Mike Johnson denied a request for Reverend Jackson to lie in honor at the U.S. Capitol. The national president of the NAACP, Derek Johnson, said, quote, "Mike Johnson will defend a president who wants to unlawfully nationalize elections, but won't authorize a civil rights legend to lie in honor." That tells you everything you need to know about Mike Johnson and his gross disregard for our Constitution and our democracy. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show looking at this week's historic bomb cyclone blizzard that blanketed states with snow from Maryland to Massachusetts. In Providence, Rhode Island, more than 37 inches of snow fell, setting a new record for the city. Climate scientists have long warned that climate change will cause more intense and more destructive nor'easters. We're joined in Philadelphia by Michael Mann, presidential distinguished professor in the Department of Earth and Environmental Science at the University of Pennsylvania, director of Penn Center for Science, Sustainability, and the Media. His most recent book, Science Under Siege, which he co-wrote with Dr. Peter Hotez. Last year, Professor Mann co-wrote a study titled The Intensification of the Strongest Nor'easters. It was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. I'm speaking to you from New York City, Professor Mann. Juan just left on one of the last planes before the bomb cyclone from New York, where our huge event was canceled for our 30th anniversary, and went back to Chicago because here in New York, a state of emergency was declared in the city and in the state by both the mayor and the governor. They were talking about a life-threatening situation. No one was allowed to be on the streets yesterday until noon. Can you talk about what's happening, how this relates to climate change?
Yeah, thanks, Amy. It's good to be with you. And here in Philly, we saw a fair amount of that snow as well. We got more than a foot. This was a historic bomb cyclone, as we sometimes call them, a nor'easter, which has to do with the fact that these storms are so strong that in one sector of the storm, you actually get winds coming from the east, which is rare for a mid-latitude storm. Now, these storms, unlike most mid-latitude storms, these coastal storms, these nor'easters, feed on the heat of the oceans. Now, we don't think of the oceans as being that warm in the winter, but they're much warmer than the land, and they still contain a substantial amount of heat. And like a hurricane, these storms feed on that heat. That's what leads to their intensification, why they become so strong. This storm was so strong, it actually had an eye-like feature. Now, it's not quite the same as the eye you see in a hurricane, but it's often a measure of just how intense this storm was. It was as strong as measured by the central pressure of the storm, one of the metrics we use, nearly as strong as a Cat 3 hurricane. And so, like hurricanes, they feed on the heat of the oceans. That gives them their intensity, and it provides all of that moisture that's available to dump out in record snowfalls.
So, Professor, does this indicate that we're going to be facing many more of these Northeasters in the future than we have in the past?
Yeah, thanks. It's a great question. Whether we'll see more of these storms or fewer of them is a little uncertain because there are a whole bunch of factors that come into that. But what we do know with some degree of confidence is that the strongest storms are getting stronger. We're seeing more intense nor'easters, and we are seeing larger snowfalls. And that's really what does the most harm, the most damage, what poses the greatest risk, are the strongest storms with the strongest damaging winds that produce the largest amount of snowfall. And we're seeing in the observations an increase in those intensities and an increase in those snowfall totals. And we expect to see that increase as long as we continue to warm up the planet by burning fossil fuels and putting carbon pollution into the atmosphere.
And what about the country's ability to respond to these storms? What policies of the Trump administration are making that more difficult in the future?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we saw this. We've been seeing this with the recent hurricane strikes. The devastating flooding that we saw in the southeastern U.S. During the hurricane season a couple of years ago, more than a year ago or so. What we're seeing, you know, is that the dismantling of, for example, FEMA, the lack of resources that they have is preventing, the sorts of assistance that typically would be provided to those in harm's way. And moreover, the Trump administration is dismantling our atmospheric modeling capability. Their attack on the National Center for Atmospheric Research, defunding this historic institution. NCAR, as it's called, does a lot of the extreme weather modeling that's used by NOAA, for example, to predict extreme weather events and to advise risk assessments of those events. And so in a whole number of ways, the defunding of the science, the defunding of the infrastructure for assistance, the Trump administration is truly putting Americans in harm's way.
Earlier this month, Professor Mann, a coalition of public health and environmental groups filed a lawsuit in federal court seeking to block President Trump's rollback of the 2009 endangerment finding, which enabled the EPA to regulate greenhouse gases under the Clean Air Act. In a separate petition, 18 children and young adults also sued the EPA, arguing the burning of fossil fuels is denying them their constitutional rights to life and liberty. Can you talk about these extreme measures of the EPA and what that endangerment finding means now?
Yeah, thanks, because that's actually the single greatest assault that we've seen from the administration on climate action, is the effort to, now that they've at least temporarily overturned the endangerment finding, which was a finding by the Supreme Court. They've been blaming this on the Obama administration. No, it was the Supreme Court that found that indeed the EPA was required to regulate carbon dioxide pollution from fossil fuel burning. And it was then 2 years later, it was actually codified by the EPA. It is the primary means by which the United States has been able to meet its obligations to the rest of the world when it comes to limiting carbon emissions. The endangerment finding is basically the policy vehicle that allows for the regulation of carbon dioxide emissions from coal-fired power plants. It's the primary vehicle that allows the government to regulate fuel efficiency standards. And it was because of that endangerment finding that the Obama administration was able to, to keep its promises to the rest of the world. And that was critical for reaching global agreements like the Paris Agreement. And of course, we know that Trump has even pulled out of the Paris Agreement now. So the Trump administration is doing the bidding of the fossil fuel industry that was basically spelled out in Project 2025. They said this was going to was what they were going to do, and this is what they are doing.
Michael Mann, I want to thank you for being with us, Presidential Distinguished Professor in the Department of Earth and Environmental Science at the University of Pennsylvania. Coming up, we go to Mexico, where dozens of people have died after Mexican security forces killed the nation's most powerful drug lord. Stay with us. Lila Downs performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We turn now to Mexico, still reeling from a wave of violence following a U.S. intelligence-aided raid killing the powerful drug lord commonly known as El Mencho Sunday morning. At least 70 people were killed in the raid targeting Nemesio Oseguera Cervantes, the head of the Jalisco New Generation cartel. And in ensuing violence, as armed groups retaliated in more than a dozen Mexican states. Suspected gang members blocked highways and set cars on fire, buses and businesses, while clashing with security forces. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum said the situation is normalizing, and the U.S. State Department continues to urge American citizens in Mexico to shelter in place amidst ongoing security operations and criminal activity. Reuters and the New York Times report that the Mexican raid targeted Oseguera, who headed Mexico's largest cartel, was aided by intelligence from the CIA and a new U.S. military-led task force. Speaking at a news conference on Monday, President Sheinbaum said the United States only played an information-sharing role in the Mexican military attack.
All operations are carried out by federal forces. There is no U.S. participation in the operation. What there is, as we have said here several times, is a great deal of information sharing. The understanding with the United States is based primarily on the exchange of intelligence information. In this case, the U.S. government provided information and even issued an intelligence statement. But the entire operation, from planning onwards, is the responsibility of federal forces, in this case, the Ministry of National Defense.
The surprise raid killing the cartel leader Oseguera, El Mencho, was the biggest Mexican security operation in over a decade and comes amidst rising pressure on Mexico from President Trump to crack down on drug cartels and organized crime in Mexico. For more, we're joined by Reuters reporter Laura Gottesdiener in Monterrey, Mexico, part of the Reuters team that won the 2025 Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting for their expose on lax regulation in the U.S. and abroad that makes fentanyl one of the world's deadliest drugs inexpensive and widely available to users in the United States. Laura Gottesdiener is also a former producer at Democracy Now! Laura, congratulations on the Pulitzer. We haven't gotten a chance to congratulate you on the air. But most importantly, right now, your piece is so important. You've written several in the last few days as you give background on what has taken place on Sunday morning. Can you explain the president, Claudia Sheinbaum's predecessor from the Morena Party, AMLO, came to power in part because of the public's frustration with the militarized war on drugs. Can you talk about the significance now of President Sheinbaum's action?
Thank you so much for having me, and hello to the whole control room and Democracy Now! Team. Thank you. Yes, so this is a very critical moment here in Mexico. The raid was really considered a shock here in Mexico, at least according to the sources that I've